Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with J.J. Cooper, I'm John Manuel. We want to thank you so much for the download, whether it's at iTunes or at baseballamerica.com. And we want to thank MLB Network for sponsoring Baseball America's podcast. I want to remind you, we have our MLB Network offer on baseballamerica.com. Baseball America remains the must-read for baseball fans from high schools to the big leagues. Now you can try 4 issues for just $4. Visit baseballamerica.com/MLB Network for this special offer.
Didn't we determine it was a forward slash?
I think we did. And I just am too tied to saying backslash. Sounds funner. Sounds like a movie title. Backslash 2 Electric Boogaloo. But with JJ, I'm John, and we have way too much to talk about, seeing as how we didn't do a podcast last week. There's a good reason for that. We were finishing league top 20s, chatting every single day, and doing draft report cards, and next up was organization top 10s. We got hectic, a little bit like General Electric around here.
Just a little insight, like in how we do those top 10s. I've been starting on my Royals list, and I have a call. I started a call with one of the guys in the Royals system. And we had a really good, conversation and all.
This is a good story.
And finally, it hit time really for both of us kind of to head home and pick up kids and all. And, and he goes, well, I guess we'll pick this up. And I looked down and realized we'd gone 95 minutes and we had covered 6 prospects. And we will talk about 45 to 50 prospects at least. So at that rate, unfortunately, we'll not have Royals in the 2011 prospect handbook. We'll just have really good coverage in the 2012 book.
We really just should have one of the crazier ideas we've had in the past would be on years where, say, and I'm not taking on the Astros, but say the Astros the last couple of years where we really had to stretch to get to 30 prospects. One of Jim Callis's crazier ideas for the handbook has been, let's just have 900 prospects, but grade them by team. And let's go, if the Astros only have 15 guys, we're just going to run a 15 Astros and we'll make up the 15 with 5 on this other club, 5 on this club, 5 on another club. And that kind of leads us right into our top 20s, JJ, because some organizations are deeper than others. I believe it was the Smiths who sang, some girls are bigger than others. Some farm systems are deeper than other farm systems' mothers. So if Chris Klein were only here.
Well, there's been a lot of 1980s references already. Yeah.
If Chris Klein were only here to give us the Morrissey impersonation, that would seal the deal. It's unfortunate that we don't have that because I really miss his Morrissey impersonation.
He did Morrissey better than Morrissey.
I guarantee you there's no scout with a better Morrissey impersonation than Chris Klein. But we digress. But, yeah, you look at it, JJ, and I think it's out there a lot in the public, and you do the Royals. We're talking about that. But, I think we expect the Royals to be our number one farm system, especially because they're star talent. But they did not have the most players on our league top 20s. That honor went to, kind of a perennial, the teams you expect to see at the top of our farm system rankings every year now. The Rangers and the Rays just got done meeting in the American League Division Series. 18 Rangers on league top 20s,
and that's 18,
15 Rays.
That's 18 different Rangers.
18 different
that's
Rangers.
It's not like if you qualify in 2 lists, you can get on them both. That's 18 different Rangers.
And one thing about that that's kind of fascinating to me is that at number the first 8 are full season guys. The last 9 or 10 are short season and rookie league. And a lot of those guys are Latin American. Jerick Profar, Miguel de los Santos, Luis Sardinas, Christian Villanueva, Carlos Melo, Teodoro Martinez. A.J. Preller doing work as the Rangers Latin American program. That's the biggest number one reason why they're – because you also have Martin Perez, already at AA, and Roman Mendez. I think they got in a trade, and I believe they got Angel Beltre in trades. But that's also good scouting work by them on Latin American players on other clubs. So
right,
that's a huge reason why they have the most players in our league top 20.
I was going to say two examples at the big league level that they acquired by trades. I mean, they
Andrews and Feliz, obviously.
Especially in Feliz's case, he wasn't someone who was in AAA, who you gotten a lot of looks at.
Yeah,
that
both
was
those
guy.
Guys were. Yeah, I think Andrews had just finished his Class A year, was in the middle of High A, and Feliz was in his first full season. He'd been at the Appy League the year before, so certainly the projection was done on both those guys, and there's still projection left on both of them. Did that list surprise you? A little bit of the team names there, JJ? I think the Dodgers checking in third with 14
in a
five-way tie.
Yeah, multi-way tie.
I think the Dodgers had a nice bounce-back year as a farm system this year.
I think, and really a lot of it comes down to, because, there's equal weight on this put to, you know, there's 20 guys being ranked in the AZL, the GCL, the Pioneer, the Northwest League, and all those. So not that it's easier to make those lists, because, I mean, it's still, you have to be, you know, one of the 20 guys in that league.
Right.
But, you know, that by itself, it doesn't mean, you know, hey, the Rangers had 18 players, so they're the best farm system.
Right.
Because the reality of it is that different leagues, it's a little easier, a little harder to make the list.
Right.
And, you know, obviously, if you're making it in the Northwest League or something, there's more projection involved.
I guess the toughest path, really, numerically, would be to go Midwest League. If you had a farm system with Midwest League, Florida State League, I think the Eastern League is the biggest.
And then PCL.
And then PCL.
If you had that.
I don't think anybody has that
right,
set
but
up.
If you had that, it is tougher because, like, the Midwest League, you know, we hear it every year. Like, well,
yeah.
How did this guy not make it? Well, it's because the Midwest League is even now even bigger.
That's it. Those low-A leagues, you can't avoid those. Both low-A leagues are big. Now the Midwest League is the bigger one. You got a 16-team league and a top 20. And that is somewhere where if we really wanted to go crazy, we could go – you know, deeper on Midwest League and
Jim,
South Atlanta League. That would kill Jim Callis.
I think Jim would, you know, and the funny thing is that, you know, I've joked about it in the past. It would be easier than easy as far as when you've done the reporting, it wouldn't be that much more to rank 30 guys.
No, it would not.
You know,
you're right.
I mean, we
it actually would be easier. It almost would be easier to do 25. It's really hard to cut off at 20 sometimes. The Eastern League, for example.
I'm sure, though, if you do it at 25, though,
you're going to
to cut it off at 25.
You're right.
I mean, but
– and for you in the Florida State League this year, you had a hard time getting to 20, it almost sounds like.
It was – yeah, but it would at the same time, if you said rank 30 guys, the difference was is that in my league that I thought this year was is that the difference between prospect number 15 and prospect number 30
mm-hmm.
wasn't that significant. So it actually would have made my job easier. I had, like – there were, like, six or seven – hard-throwing or really a reliever with a good pitch.
Right.
Well, picking between those six and saying, okay, two of them are going to make it was not easy. If you said, hey, let's make them all, put them all on there, that's actually easier. It would have been easy to write those guys up. I had the notes on them.
Right.
But we do have to at some point, you know.
You got to pick 20. You got to put your name next to 20.
Right.
Let's talk about some of the more, I don't know if you'd say controversial, but some of the ones that the chats are all done with the exception of Indie Ball.
Come in later today.
By the time you hear this,
you will have the Indie Chat to read.
And we're not having an Indie only podcast. I apologize. We do have the best photo ever for Indie Ball, I think.
Good job,
leading
Dave
the website.
Griffey.
That's outstanding. But let's talk about some of the more controversial prospects. And the first name that really seemed to throw people off was Wilmer Flores.
Absolutely. That was the biggest.
South Atlantic League did not make the top 20. Florida State League did make the top 20 and actually made the
number 10.
I think there's reasons for both. There's actually some validity. I think, number one, it shows personal preference.
Right.
You believe in that profile a little bit more than Bill Ballew believes in that profile.
And that's one of the things that we talked about this on the podcast, the last podcast we did, that, you know, well, one of the things with this is that these lists are a little more personal.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, because it's so early in our reporting process that you kind of defer to the person who's talking to all the managers and all the scouts in that league. Bill Ballew, you know, talked to a lot of guys in the, you know, Sally League, and they said, you know, hey, you know, this is the reasons we don't like him as much as some other guys.
Certainly weren't sold on him as a star. I think in the office consensus would be, if you could pick between Chris Dominguez and Wilmer Flores, you'd pick Wilmer Flores. But if you were lining them up tools-wise, Wilmer Flores does not have as big a tools as Chris Dominguez does.
Right.
Chris Dominguez has huge raw power, and he has a 70 throwing arm.
The better way that we could put
it.
And
some athletic ability.
We talked about this, you know, in the office, me and you. If we were doing the top 20, having not made those calls,
right,
which may change it.
Just reading the profiles and reading
the
report.
Looking at the players and reading the profiles and what we know about them, I think we'd have both had Wilmer Flores in the top 20.
But it wouldn't have been in the top 10, and it would have been maybe in the 15. 15
right.
to 20 range is kind of where he would have been.
Right. Well,
at least for me.
No, I don't disagree with you. Sally League was a deep. It's got, you know, it's 14 team league. It's
there are a lot
league
of guys whose best asset is their 18 or 19 in that league. You know,
yeah.
And that's really Wilmer Flores' best asset. Everything else is you're projecting some.
But no, the hit tool though, he's already considering his. You know, yes, you are considering his age, but he's showing the hit tool now.
True.
He's not hitting for 210, and you're projecting
right.
that he's going to hit. He's
right.
Hitting
good point.
Now. You know, so
he's not necessarily hitting with a lot of authority, though.
Not hitting a lot of power, but, you know, that's something that, I mean,
That was a very Gammons-esque but, by the way.
But.
Three syllables, I think. So I like
but it. But it is something where, you know, as an 18, 19-year-old, sometimes you do allow for the power.
Right.
But you have to say the hit tool is what everyone is telling us is his best tool, and he is showing it. There is some present hit tool, not just
correct.
Projection.
No, it's not all projection. You're right. And I think it's a lot of, one part of the problem is, and Jim and I have talked about this over the years, I think you and I have had this discussion, where it's really harder to evaluate a guy at a position, whatever the sport is. It's very difficult in basketball to evaluate a guy who you think is going to be a wing in the NBA, but he's playing in the post in college.
Absolutely.
Because of how many posts. In the NFL, it's very difficult, I think, isn't it, to evaluate a guy who's maybe a linebacker in college, but in the NFL you'd like him to be a safety.
Right.
Isn't
oh,
that very
absolutely.
Difficult to evaluate?
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think this is what you have with Wilmer Flores. It's more difficult to evaluate a slow-moving, really not a, kind of a slow-twitch shortstop.
And
he has some similarities, as we talked about last time, to Joel Guzman, as far as a big guy who's playing shortstop. And I think sometimes you can get a little hung up on, man, he really can't play shortstop. Where is he going to wind up? You don't know where he's going to wind up because you've never even seen him try third base or left field.
Right. And the thing about it is that I think that was the thing that I was most surprised in doing the calls. On the negative was I knew that Flores was not, the expectation was that, by the way, if y'all hearing in the background.
Yeah. Someone's, next door, I think, shedding a sheep.
Offices,
shearing sheep. Back
shearing sheep,
the
skinning cats. They're doing something, but you may pick it up on the podcast. But I knew that he wasn't much of a runner. I knew that that I'd heard for a while now he's
right.
not probably going to be a shortstop. But it wasn't until I started making these FSL calls that you went, wow, so he's that slow?
Right, exactly. Because you got like 30 times on, didn't you?
I had a scout tell me, if you're generous, 30.
Yeah.
Well, that's, as a teenager, if you're generous, a 30. That means as a 25-year-old, you're talking, if he fills out at all, you may be talking about a two-runner.
No, I'm on a base clogger. You're talking about a base clogger.
And the thing about it is that, so kind of with that, I had a couple different scouts say, I don't project him to be an outfielder. I don't think he can run well enough to be an outfielder unless he really works on his agility and improves his feet, which you don't often see.
Right.
You don't often see a teenager, you turn around at 25 and go, wow, that guy's faster than
yeah,
the person
that doesn't happen a lot.
But that being the case, it's like, some guys said, well, I project him as the first baseman. Well,
and then that's the thing. If you're projecting him as a first baseman, I can understand why you're ranking it behind a guy like Chris Dominguez.
But at the same time, and the calls out in the FSL, there were more guys, I would say, who said, look, he's not like this disaster at shortstop where
right.
you go, what are they
sounds
doing?
Sounds like his hands and his feet
his
work.
His hands and his feet work.
He just slow.
The arm's not terrible. That being the case, I think he's a third baseman down the road. And if he's a third baseman, if you like the hit tool, which a lot of guys do,
sure.
squares up the ball a lot, if you think the power's going to develop, well, then you're talking about someone pretty interesting.
He's definitely a controversial prospect, though. I want to read Bill Ballou's answer from the chat because I want to give some of Bill's insight here. Flores has the ability to hit for average, and his defense is steady on balls he can reach. The problem is Flores does not run well and has very limited range at a key defensive position. He's going to need to change positions, and with that position change, his limited power will become a bigger negative. Flores is young, and he plays easy with the ability to put the ball in play. In my mind, at least, the sum of his strong tools do not add up to an exceptional player at higher levels. So I think really Bill's issue is that he doesn't have star potential. I think that's fair.
I think that's
it's not my list, and Bill sees the salary league at least 70 times a year in Asheville. I would have thought that he would have made that top 20. I thought putting him at 10 in the Florida State League was, really a great spot for him, just looking at your list.
Right.
And he's not a sure thing as a star. And honestly, the Mets' recent track record with Latin guys, hype and then not living up to hype, plays into that for me. I'm not giving them the benefit of the doubt on Latin players right now.
And another thing with that that makes it hard to evaluate, but another thing that makes them hard to evaluate is that with their Latin players, a lot of times guys are playing – you hear it multiple times from people from
yep.
outside the organization saying that guy's a level or that guy's two levels above where he should be.
Yep.
So it's hard to get a good read on him because he's over his head.
It's like them and the Tigers. Very aggressive. in pushing their players.
But the Mets are very aggressive in pushing their Latin players.
And not.
And then with their U.S. players, a lot of times
you will
like
go to Brooklyn.
That guy is a level or two levels below where he should be.
Yeah, they actually promoted some of their guys at the end. But there was a month in Binghamton when I talked to Josh Satin in the Mets system. There was a month in Binghamton. It was like a glorious month where Blue was there, I'm sure. And then, but they had Josh Satin, Sean Ratliff, Captain Kirk, Neuenhaus, Nick Evans, and somebody else. But they were all, the band was there for basically 1 month. Then Nick Evans got promoted to AAA. But so that was one example where they actually pushed Nick Evans all the way down to AA. But the New York team seemed to have the most, the most controversial guys on our list this year. One thing I want to also throw in on Flores, it's not like he was tearing up the Cy League. 775 OPS, it's good. It wasn't like he was tearing it up.
Right.
It's not like he needed to be promoted to the Florida State League. And then he did fine in the Florida State League, obviously. But I like Wilmer Flores. I just don't know that I think he's a star.
Okay. No, another guy, and I know
you need to move on
pretty
from
New
Wilmer
York
Flores.
Heavy, you know. We're
that's
pretty,
okay.
But, you know, these are two guys who there was – I think there's a lot of interest in, even if you're not a Mets or Yankees
yep.
fan. But another guy that we got a lot of questions about was Andrew Brackmann, who ranked lower – significantly lower in the FSL than he did in the EL. And, you know, I do the FSL, you do the EL,
right,
so we're
right.
the, you know, guys to talk about this. And the thing about it is that I have no problem with your EL ranking, and I think you don't really have a problem with my FSL ranking because the explanation on this one is completely league context.
Right. Yeah, he was basically, I think this was a case of a player who got better.
Yeah, he was a much better player in September than he was in April.
And trying to track, Yankees prospects all year. Is definitely a guy who early on, and when we were doing the mid-season update, just a guy who I couldn't find anybody who saw him pitch well in the first half of the season. And
which is when he was in the FSL.
Right, absolutely. And it really just seemed like it was August when, you know, it just the switch was flipped by Andrew Brackmann. And when you've got a guy talking about, putting 6 or 7 grades on a fastball and 6 or 7 grades on his breaking ball and showing feel for both those pitches – throwing strikes with both of them, angle, and putting guys
and
away.
And having success with it.
And having success.
I mean
there's
ERA
really no,
under one for a stretch there.
There was really no negative for him in the Eastern League. I mean, for the Eastern League stretch, 3.01 ERA, 80 and two-thirds innings. But the main thing for me, just with him as a prospect overall, is 39 walks and 140-plus innings. Last year, this guy was, 7 strike walks per 9 innings? This year was, under, 2.5, right at 2.5.
Right.
So.
I mean, he's still a high-risk prospect because it's something that that's the longest stretch of success that he's had as
right.
a pro. That's the longest stretch of success
14,
he's had.
14 starts.
It's the longest stretch of success he's had since he was a
ever.
Freshman.
Really, since ever. Because
yeah.
as a freshman, even then, it was less than 14 starts.
But, so you have that, and you have that it does seem like he's a guy. I mean, again, They're long levers. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
So with that, one of the, cliches or the scouting, like just something you hear in scouting a lot, as people talk about.
Right.
Big, tall pitchers like that, often it takes a long time to figure it out.
No doubt.
Well, so he may have figured it out, but if not, the reason there's still risk there is that it seems like he's a guy who has days where he goes out normally. Now, this
yeah.
year, late season, but there's days he goes out. And it's a 50 fastball.
Absolutely, or not even.
Or not even.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, he finds it.
Absolutely.
Like.
That is him in a nutshell. I'm not saying he's going to be Randy Johnson.
Right.
But Randy Johnson's first good big league year really didn't come until he was 27 in 1990. And even then, he led the league in walks, which he did for
now,
the next 3 seasons.
Correct me if I'm wrong. The one thing coming up with Brackmann that's going to affect this a little bit is how many more options?
I believe he's out of options next after 2011. I think 2011.
So this will be the key year for
yeah.
him because of the major league contract. That
he needed to get good. He needed to start figuring it out, and he did.
The good news for the Yankees on that is that he's shown enough now, that you would think you would be able to put him in a pen at some point next year if you had to.
If you had
to. Speed up his
if you had to, he could definitely be a long man. I mean, for a team that, has used guys like Sergio Mitre and Chad Godin, that's not exactly talent that you're losing there that you can't live without.
And it may be even a way to eventually to work him into the big leagues to kind of get him ready.
And, I mean, they gave those guys starts this year, Mitre as well, so it's not like you couldn't give him starts. The rest of New York's team is – pretty good. You could work Andrew Brackmann in there. But, yeah, his success at AA was crucial.
But
And there's really not a consensus that I've seen yet about Dylan Betances, Andrew Brackmann, Manny Banuelos. But I would say the Yankees, as a farm system, had about as good a year as any farm system.
They had a really good, yeah. Yeah, I would say as far as farm systems having a good year, them and the Royals are the two that, jump out as far as guys having success.
Let's talk a little bit about the Royals, JJ, because, you know, the only 12 guys. But can you remember one team having 1, 2, 3 prospects in a league top 10 like they did in the Texas League?
The funny
at
thing
a
is
high
the,
level like
but
that?
Not only they did it in the Texas League, but they did it in the Texas
Carolina
League and
too.
The Carolina League. They were one guy away. They basically
– It was 1, 2, 4, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was 1, 2 – So 2, 3, Tehran was one.
Yeah, it was 2, 3, 4 after that.
So, I mean, you know, it's pretty sick. I mean,
the Yankees, I should have mentioned, they were one of those five teams with 14 guys apiece on these league top 20s.
You know, I think the thing that keeps the Royals, you know, they only had, they had 12.
Only 12, yeah.
You know, they had 12 guys make, you know, 12 different guys make the top 20s. You know, they didn't have, you know, they have 17s, but I don't think they had an Appy League guy make it. And
I don't think they
had a Pioneer. That I don't remember if Cuthbert made it in the Pioneer League or not. He already counted, though, from the AZL.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
So they didn't have – their lower-level teams did not have the same numbers as, you know, as, say, the Rangers did. That was really the difference. The thing with their 12 is I think 9 of them are
– the first 9 are all full season.
Are full season guys.
That's 90 of your top 10, maybe not really. I mean, like Lewis Coleman probably isn't your top 10 prospects.
But that's not, you know.
Moustakas, Hosmer, Montgomery, Crow, Lamb, Myers, Dwyer, Cologne, and then Coleman was the other guy, other full season prospect.
Well, here's the thing.
Tim Melville not included. They didn't make a league top 20 in contention, I would imagine, for your top, for your league, your organization top 10.
But it's going to be, you know, like I said, I started working on it. It's the best top 30 I've ever worked on, as far as I can say that now before I've written like two players. But the thing that jumps out is they, from last year's top 30, 27 of the 30 are still in the system and still qualify to be in this year's top 30. Then they traded for, I think, 5 guys who qualify for the top 30, and at least a couple of those are assured of making it, I would think. Then you throw in that their 2010 draft, and they drafted 4th, so and they spent $800,000 on a 5th-round pick who's really interesting. So say there's 4 or 5 guys from that draft that you have to seriously consider putting in the top 30. Then you know, and that doesn't count. They had some Latin guys. You know, the number 2 and number 3 prospects in the AZL were Latin guys who didn't rank last year because they hadn't been in the U.S. And then you throw in guys who weren't in the top 30 last year who had good years, and they had a couple of those guys. So
your Donny Ventura and Robinson Yambati. Those are great names as well.
But you throw that all together, and the reality, like you said, if we did do a, you know, rank, you know, we're just going to rank 900 players.
Yeah.
You'd
go 35 or 40 deep on the Royals.
At least 40, I'd say. You know, I mean, I would be, if you told me to rank the 45th guy in the Royal system this year and write him up, I'd be more comfortable with that guy's chances of making it than several number 30s I've done in the past.
Yeah, the Yankees, I think, would be a little bit deeper than 30 this year. They'd be a lot deeper than 30.
Oh, yeah.
Even with some of the depth that they have. And they didn't lose a lot of guys. They didn't lose a lot of their guys. And they, really, very few players in their system stepped backwards, and many, many of them stepped forward. Jeremy Blythe stepped back. David Adams stepped forward and then stepped back because he got hurt. But most of their guys stepped forward, Hector Nwesi, Ivan Nova, almost all their pitchers other than Bleich. And then, of course, Jesus Montero was stepping back and then had this monster second half.
I was going to say,
I think he's maybe, like you say that Austin Romine held serve. I wouldn't say he stepped back, but he didn't step forward either. It's a Baseball America podcast with John and JJ. Other league top 20 thing I did want to touch on is you are doing your Indie Ball top 10. And I want to mention that our Facebook page, Baseball America Facebook page, we've got how many people are liking us now? 6,467. So if you don't already,
thank you for
the 6,400 who do. And if you don't already, press the. It's very simple. Get the like button and follow us on Facebook. But Ben Crossett was among the people who commented. I got to find the right email, but there was Irv Botello, perhaps related to Derek, but Irv Botello who asked, "Want some indie ball love? Is the indie list going to go 10 or 20 deep this year, JJ?"
It's up now, just went up on the site, and it's 10 deep as far as scouting reports. I get it to 25 names, but I did cut it off at 10 as far as actually putting the scouting reports up there. I mean, the reality of it is that, you know, partly because if you go to 20 deep, I can put more names out there, but the reality of it is there aren't going to be 20 guys that I'm going to name who have a legitimate, you know, who are likely to sign.
If you get if you get 10 or 12 guys out of that who sign, you're
if out of that list, six or seven end up signing, that's a good year.
That's a great year.
You know, because, you know, the reality of it is that especially now, teams are scouting indie ball more, so guys who a couple of years ago would have made this list can't make it. Jason Lowy would have been number one on this list. Well,
right.
Jason Lowy, you know, or he may not have been number one if I said everyone who signed this year, but he would have been very high up on it. He signed with the Braves a couple of months ago. He instead of being, you know, number one or number two on this list, he had a very good final month in Myrtle Beach.
Right, right.
Those guys don't qualify, so this is, you know, it takes a little more work every year to find 10 to put on there because, you know, the Daniel Nava example, Daniel Nava doesn't make through a whole year now.
Right,
you know,
Justin Christian. Justin Christian,
right.
Another guy, I think.
No, he didn't make it through the whole year. He never got to make it. That was before to do the top 10.
Okay.
So he was signed, you know, during the season. He hit 400 in Frontier.
Was it Eduardo Ramirez? He was signed before the
year. He was signed before the year ended, too.
Those
guys, you know, there's always been guys signed, but it does seem now there are, you know, when I was putting together this list, Tampa, right? The Rays clearly are doing a pretty good job of it because player after player, I would call a manager that talked about a player on his team. They go, well, he's heading down to Tampa. They got a tryout going on, you know, in a couple of days, you know. And I've heard that before of, you know, the Phillies, you know, always had a big tryout at the end of the season where they take a look at, you know, 20, 30 guys. Some other teams do that.
Which organization would you say scouts indie ball the best?
If you're set over a long haul, I'd say
Padres?
A couple. The Padres have done it for a long time. The Phillies have done it for a long time.
The Brewers kind of have to be in that.
The Brewers are in that list, definitely. The Brewers are definitely in that list. You know, and then when you go past that, I mean, you know, you got to throw. I mean, the Red Sox just got Daniel Nava up, and they brought up Robert Coelho in the late of the season. That's two guys there. So
stunning to me that two of the indie ball guys I can think of have made the big leagues are Yankees, Justin Christian and Eduardo Ramirez. Mm. Neither one of them really stuck around very long, but it just always surprises me that the Yankees are among the teams that scouts indie ball heavily.
But again, the thing about it is you know, and I'm an indie ball proponent. The amount of money and the amount of time that you have to spend to do it is so little that it does baffle me that teams just completely ignore it.
Right,
because
I agree.
The amount of money you're talking about is often less than what you would sign, you know, for your 50th round pick, which makes sense. They were undrafted most of
right,
the
time. Right.
But with that being the case, you've had a chance, you know, to look at a guy and see what he's doing against older competition a lot of cases. So you know, well, if a 22-year-old, you know, like Chris Garcia, who just signed with the Braves, who's number three on this list.
Okay.
So just signed with the Braves. He's hit really well the last 2 years in the American Association, and he's 22. Well, if he's doing that against 28, 30-year-old pitchers, a lot of whom have double-A, triple-A experience, it's at least worth taking a look at because
he's at least an organizational guy.
Yeah, because at least, you know, the same thing that, you know, number one pick on this list last year, Ronaldo Rodriguez, went to Greenville in the Sally League.
And he hit fine.
He was really one of the key guys in the pennant race for them, you know, they went down to the playoffs. He may never make the big leagues, but he had value this year in that he was, you know, one of the better players on that Greenville team. Well, you know, there's something. If nothing else, he was a solid org player.
Right, right. Speaking of the American Association, very briefly, we'll give props to the American Association for existing, first of all, by when the Northern League had a divide and split up. We're getting deep indie ball talk on the podcast here. But the Northern League, if you just read Baseball America in general, and every once in a while you check in on the independent leagues, the first independent league really was the Northern League, correct?
The Frontier started the same year, correct? They started the same year, but the Northern League is the reason that indie ball exists.
They're the flag bearer, the standard bearer of modern independent minor league baseball.
If the Northern League
and they're just
failed,
about dead.
If the Northern League had failed in 1990, you know, in the early 90s, if you know, say that it lasted two seasons,
right?
You know, 95, they shut things down.
You probably wouldn't have
indie ball.
The proliferation of indie
because
ball.
Because at that point, the Frontier League was really struggling. And what happened is by 95, everyone who had ever wanted to own a baseball team and had not been able to, you know, land an affiliate team's like, hey, let's start an indie league. And that's so it. You had this massive boom of
explosion.
Indie leagues, most of which lasted about an hour and a half.
That'll be a different podcast, but you and Will will talk about the history of indie ball.
But Northern League was the reason.
And now the Northern League is down to, what, four teams?
And you have to realistically think. I know the Northern League is talking, you know, very strong about, hey, we plan
putting on a brave face.
They're putting, you know, which you have to do. You know, you don't, until you're, until
I'm not dead yet.
Until you shut things down, you don't say, you know, well, we're, you know, we've been gutted and there's no way that we can go forward. You don't say that.
But victory for the American Association, which basically is most of the teams that you think of were in the Northern League, like the St. Paul Saints American Association.
Right.
You know.
So, yeah, it's been a it's a pretty significant move. It's something, to be honest with you, kind of thought would happen in indie ball for a couple of years now, just with the economy taking a hit. You know, minor league baseball has, you know, overall has taken a hit with that. Indie ball has a smaller margin. You're not, again, the whole thing, you know, indie ball says no one's paying those salaries except for the team,
right,
you know, or in some cases the league if the team's struggling. They're not, you know, there's not getting a check from the big league club saying, okay, well, here's your meal money for this month.
Right.
That, so indie ball has a smaller margin of error there. You know, the reality is that, so you're going to see some weak teams, you know, kind of get weeded out, some weak leagues. Well, that makes sense that you have consolidation then, and so you, you know, may not have as many leagues in 2011 or 2012.
That section of your Baseball America directory, you're going to get a little thinner, I think, in the 2011 directory. Let's wrap up the podcast here talking a little bit about the playoffs.
Playoffs.
We probably should talk about
playoffs.
Baseball that people care a little bit more about. No offense on any
ball. No, I understand that. Even I care. You know, even I, you know.
But I do think it was interesting. It was a big week. Your favorite week of the year. Indie ball, top 20, top 10, however many you end up ranking. And then this giant news of the American Association swallowing up the remains of the Northern League. But I think I went 2-2 in my playoff predictions. I completely whiffed on the American League. I think I may have fought with my heart on the Twins-Yankees series. And then I really did go with my head with the Rays-Rangers series. But
well,
kudos,
that one could have, it clearly could have come, you know, gone either way.
But kudos to the Rangers. What to you is the biggest story of the division series round? Was it Roy Halladay's no-hitter, or was it the prevalence, again, of mistakes by umpires? Tim Lincecum's 14-strikeout game?
I'm going to go with the theme of pitching, because
yeah,
there was so many pitching standout pitching performances. You know, you had, I mean, you could,
Cliff Lee.
You had Cliff Lee, you had Halladay, you had Lincecum, you know, heck, Jonathan Sanchez was really good for, you know, for a good while. I mean, even, like, David Price pitched well in Game 5. He didn't feel particularly well, but he pitched well. You know, there was, we've seen, and with that, what we're seeing in some ways is kind of a return to, I mean, the Rangers won that series not by sitting back and hitting a three-run homer, but they won that series because they ran the bases extremely well. That's not something that really you saw 5 years ago.
Right. I mean, and it wasn't just Elvis Andrews, although he was one of the guys who did it, but Nelson Cruz and Vladimir Guerrero, guys who aren't known for their speed.
Heck, Benji Molina got a steal.
That was amazing. And here's a talking about Cliff Lee pitching. I guess Dave Cameron, I don't know if this was on Twitter or if he did this on USS Mariner. He might have done it on Fangraphs. He's everywhere. But had this stat that he passed along. Cliff Lee, 56 playoff innings in his career, 12 hits, 12 runs, 38 hits, only one home run allowed, 6 walks, 54 strikeouts. By comparison, Sandy Koufax, 57 innings. Did you see this?
Yeah.
10 runs. 36 hits, 11 walks, 61 strikeouts. That's pretty amazing.
It is pretty amazing. I will point out, you know, we are a little bit apples and oranges here because
divisions here, but there were two World Series starts last year, obviously.
Right, there are two
all
World Series.
All of Koufax's were,
you know.
That's a good stat, though.
No, it's a good stat, but it does, you know, it is. It's the same thing. Like when people are saying, well, where does Halladay's rank? It's like, it doesn't rank in the same category as Larson's. Not taking anything away from it, but Game 7 World Series is. Is a different. Although
it wasn't Game 7. It was just in the series.
Sorry, Game 5.
I don't know what game it was.
But World Series is different than Division Series. But
no doubt about it. But it also was his first start of the for him in the playoffs ever. But he also is Roy Halladay. Don Larson was Don Larson. Don Larson was an average pitcher.
Right.
Who had an amazing game. This kind of was like a capper, you know, for
this
Roy Halladay.
Yeah, this was more of something where you. Yeah.
This feels like it's a capper on the way to, you know, capping his career kind of deal. I did see something the other day also that struck me as interesting that, you know, you really do kind of have these juggernauts, it seems like, JJ, with you have the Giants and the Rangers, who are kind of the upstarts and I think are given a chance but certainly aren't the favorites. And then you have last year's World Series teams, and it's amazing how the Phillies have transformed themselves into this team that everyone loves to hate now.
But the thing about it is the Phillies are not
so
far
good.
Away from being, you know, what
– A World Series this year makes them a dynasty.
Right.
If they go to three World Series in a row and win two of them and beat the Yankees to do one of them.
And the thing about it is we haven't had that many dynasties. I mean, like, you know, the Yankees clearly have been a dynasty.
Right. The Braves were a dynasty.
The Braves were
the only one
in
the World Series.
But the reality of it is that they were an ineffectual dynasty in some ways, in that you – to be a true – I think the Phillies, not to be a true dynasty, as you said, they have to win it. Because if you win two –
It's a big difference.
It makes a big difference in winning one.
I still think, like, to me, the Bills were in the NFL were still a dynasty.
Yeah, but they were –
just because no one else has done four Super Bowls in a
right.
row.
But they were the little brother-like dynasty. You know, the Cowboys were the dynasty going on because they were beating up
now
on the Bills.
Now, that's the Bills' problem is they were at the same time as another better dynasty.
Right.
But I still – and the same thing with the Braves. The Braves were going on – their dynasty coincided with the Yankees' dynasty. It predated it a little bit and didn't last as long.
I was going to say, the reality is that the Blue Jays –
and the Yankees
Jays,
were the better dynasty.
But, the you know –
The Blue Jays
the
were
Blue
a dynasty.
The Blue Jays actually were a more effective dynasty in some ways than the Braves.
See, I would disagree, but I'm a North Carolina basketball fan. I think the consistency over a long period of time impresses me more than the short burst. So the Yankees are the number one dynasty because they had a distant – they had,
right.
You know, going from 95 to 2007 every year making the playoffs, only missing in 08, and now making it the last 2 years. And they had the four World Series.
Right, but at the same time, you know, not being a Carolina Tar Heel fan, as you know, the same way.
Yeah.
The reality of it is that when you start the season, the goal is not to make it to the World Series. The goal is to get the ring.
Absolutely. But what sport values the regular season more than Major League Baseball?
No.
And the Braves' regular season track record is better than anyone's.
The Braves' regular season
track
record.
I think you have to call them a dynasty.
No, I'm not saying they're not a dynasty, but I'm saying –
they're just not as good as the Yankee dynasty.
I'm saying they're not as good as the Yankee dynasty.
Yeah.
And the reality of it is that, you know, like – We didn't really have a dynasty in the
80s. Either better than the – no, there was. There was no dynasty in the 80s. That's the best thing about the 80s.
Yeah.
That it had unbelievable competitive balance, and free agency ushered in this age of competitive
balance.
Although
we also – part of the, you know, it was both free agency, and then we did have a collusion era there that, you know –
Sure.
Was
sure.
Also seemed to usher in balance.
It skewed some things, yes. It skewed some things.
Sorry, Tim Raines. We can't find – no one wants you.
Yeah, exactly. Blank check, Andre Dawson, you know, Jack Morris, who went begging – So, I mean, the only dynasty of that kind of time, really, the only team that won two in that time, really, was the Dodgers in 81 and 88, and then you had the Twins in 87
and
91.
Yeah, I was going to say, and the Dodgers were in two entirely
right.
different teams.
I mean, Kirby Puckett was, like, the big winner. I mean, you had the sort of dynasty with the A's where they went to three straight World Series, but they only won one. So, you know, and again, that's 3 or 4 years of the A's in the 80s. You know, the Bash Brothers were great, as opposed to the Braves, who, again, did it over – 15 years and won there with only the one World Series. But to me, I agree. If the Phillies were to win a World Series now, it's another dynasty. And the Yankees, is almost like, is this part of the old dynasty or is it a new dynasty? It feels new because they're so dependent on CeCe Sabathia, but they still have that core four.
I was going to say, they're still, to me, as long as Mariano Rivera is on the mound when they celebrate,
that's true.
It's part of the same dynasty.
Well, we'll see if CeCe gets a complete game.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a changing
maybe
of the
that
guard.
Changes. But if Jeter runs up to, you know, to hug Rivera at the end of it, that's the same dynasty.
I'm telling you what, Mariano Rivera is never going to have to come in and close for CeCe Sabathia eating one of those double XL chalupas. He's
true.
Never going to come in and close. CeCe's going to finish off one of those troughs of greasy meat and be like, "Where's my second one?"
Yeah.
You know, we just went to Taco Bell today. I shouldn't admit that, but. That's a gross commercial and a gross looking.
This podcast is not brought to you by Taco Bell, but we did.
That's a gross looking commercial and an odd commercial for Mariano Rivera to be in.
As I said to you yesterday. So basically, what this commercial says is Mariano Rivera has been reduced to eating the last couple of bites of random people's.
I mean, the most memorable commercials right now of the postseason are the Conan commercials, obviously, but none of them have been bad. There are no Frank TV commercials in here. And this inexplicable, okay, I understand you're calling for a closer, but Mariano Rivera, really? At a fast food restaurant of any kind? It just doesn't make any sense.
He's kept himself in good shape.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. It's not like it's fast food.
Doesn't look like us.
It's not fast food Panamanian. You know, it just that strikes me as strange. Who do you got though, JJ? Do you think it's going to be Phillies Yankees? Could there be any way we're going to avoid this? Can the Giants? Are the Giants the most likely spoiler because of their starting pitching?
No, I don't think so. Just because a couple of things. I don't think the problem is the Phillies have the pitching to match up with the Giants.
Yeah, they do.
And you look at the lineups, and I don't think there's...
Their big advantage is that fourth starter, Madison Bumgarner over Joe Blanton. That's their big edge, you know.
Okay, so yeah, that, and that'll come up one time in this
Right, exactly. That's what I'm saying. I mean, maybe, you know, I love Jonathan Sanchez, and I love that they moved him up to two. I might give Jonathan Sanchez an edge over Roy Oswalt, but if it's Roy, but if it were Sanchez-Hamels, I'm going Hamels.
And the flip side of it, you give, you know... No, I could see the Giants winning it. There's no doubt about that because you can say, okay, you can easily see Lincecum, you know, winning game. You know, you could see Lincecum winning two games in the series.
Right, right.
You could see, as you said, you could see Bumgarner winning one. You could see Sanchez winning one. Well, there you go. You've got a series. Like, you could see each of those pitchers. Their pitchers are good enough that if they're on, they can beat anybody.
It's hard to imagine that the Giants scoring enough runs. It's a pretty anemic lineup. But one thing I want to point out is the Giants, we went through all eight playoff teams. Can't think of another team that has three first-round picks in a row. And it's going to be hard to go back in memory and find a team that hit on three first-rounders in a row, as well as the Giants hit with Lincecum in 06, the way Bumgarner is going, the way he looks like he's going to be a big hit for 07, and Buster Posey in 2008. 3 years in a row, three Giants first-round picks, and they basically completely overhauled their big league team and went from a non-factor to one of the final four teams left.
And it's extremely impressive. And the other thing that's maddening about it that we've talked about is that, and this is the same team that they didn't have first round picks the 2 years before that.
As a matter of course,
they didn't want them.
That's right, and they just punted.
They deliberately got rid of them.
He basically punted the first four rounds of the 2005 draft. First three rounds, I guess, it was just on free agents.
Once they started drafting again. Things went really well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And even in 05, they got three big leaguers, and one of them is Sergio Romo, like in the 28th round or something like that. So they've always had this ability to find pitchers. It's kind of impressive. I will also say the American League, I did not give the Rangers enough credit, especially
their
pitchers.
I could see the Rangers beating the Yankees.
C.J. Wilson's dangerous, and obviously Cliff Lee is an X factor.
And clearly the Yankees, you know, seem to almost, I mean, if there's anyone they fear, Cliff Lee seems to be the kryptonite for them.
No doubt.
But beyond that, the thing about it is that I can see it because I do, you know, once you get past Sabathia, the rest of the Yankees pitching staff, I think, is beatable.
It's hard to know how much stock to put in Phil Hughes' dominant outing against the Twins. Was that because Phil Hughes was so good, which he was? The velocity readings were good. He looked rested. He's clearly going to be rested here. The Yankees are showing some confidence in him. They moved him up to the number two spot. They want to have Pettit, obviously, in the three-spot pitching in Yankee Stadium, but and that all makes sense. But is that for real, or is that a function of the Twins just thinking, we can't beat these guys, we're done? I mean, it's like, it was pitiful.
Oh, also the Twins, you know, like being, wow, how many of our guys are hurt?
Yeah, that's true, too, because Joe Mauer certainly wasn't himself in that series. But I think I didn't, you know, I want to make sure that, to me, the Rangers are just better than I thought they were. And they can beat you in more different ways. And we saw them out-athlete the Rays. I think the Rays' athleticism and speed kind of would be a significant factor for the Yankees. But the Rangers showed they can play that game.
I think it's going to be Yankees-Phillies. But,
I do
with
too.
Yankees-Rangers, I think that's a 55-45. I think the Rangers have that much, you know, have a very legit chance.
If the Giants had more offensive potential, I would think that the Giants could pull off an upset. But I just can't see them scoring enough runs. I know that the Phillies lineup is streaky, so I agree. I think that the Rangers have a little bit better chance just because I just don't have faith
I'm
in San Francisco's lineup.
Once the Giants go to the pen, who are the lefties in the pen?
I think it's Jeremy Affeldt, isn't it?
That's going to be crucial. You need lefties in the pen, obviously, when you
That certainly out. Helps. Of course, the other question is, I don't believe they've named their roster yet, but they could have Barry Zito as one of their lefties in the pen. And, you know, Andy Baggerly tweeted at Extra Bags, that our Giants correspondent, that Zito was the only guy at AT&T Park the other day, but long before their workout started, just by himself, throwing off flat ground with Dave Rigetti watching, you know, kind of doing a side session. Yeah, Jeremy Affeldt's their other left-hander.
By the way.
Oh, and Javier Lopez, actually, though, who pitched effectively against the Braves.
But just a random, very random thing. But if I'm a team out there.
I thought you were going to talk long toss.
No, but if I'm a team out there, there's no way I'd sign Dionisio Navarro. And this is random. Yeah. I know it's random. But
he should be looking for work in the Golden League next year.
But the reality of it is that
or the Americans,
if speaking of like Zito doing, that's what a player should do. You're left off the roster,
correct.
But you know what? You're part of this team. We're in the playoffs. I cannot fathom as a player saying, you know what? I'm not going to stick around and make sure that I'm ready in case you need
me. Smell you later, guys.
That is, there is no excuse that I can think of that explains, like, oh, I'm unhappy, I'm not on the roster, I'm going home.
It is, and you bring up Dionisio Navarro, and to me, that's the best sliding doors, what if sports, whatever you want to call it, of the playoffs, is what if the Rays, with the first pick in 2008, had taken Buster Posey, who I don't think we had as a number one prospect in that draft. In fact, I'm pretty sure I looked this up, and we had Tim Beckham 3 and Buster Posey 4 in terms of ranking the prospects. But they were close.
Right there together.
And
they needed a catcher.
And they needed a catcher. Now, Dionisio Navarro was in the first half of that season on his way to the All-Star game. But he was still Dionisio Navarro. And I think it's just amazing that the Rays didn't draft Buster Posey. And you really think about what if they had. And that is, again, it's a little revisionist history, no doubt.
No,
but
it's just a what-if, yeah.
It's a what-if, and if they have drafted Buster Posey, just think how different their lineup would be, where instead of having Carlos Peña, still having to hit in the middle of the lineup.
Because that's the thing that just seemed to jump out over and over in the series was they seemed about a bat short.
They were a bat short. They were a bat short compared to Texas, there's no doubt about it. And the Giants' history would be slightly different, but the Giants deserve all the credit in the world for Buster Posey, Madison Bumgarner, Tim Lincecum. Those are three great first-round picks, one after the other, and that's why they're in the playoffs. And a lot of other teams in the National League, you know, the Dodgers made the playoffs. Why? Because they had a run in the beginning of the decade where they just drafted hit after hit after hit after hit, and they haven't been as good as lately.
As of late,
Clayton Kershaw was a great hit, but they haven't been as deep, and you know, some of the other moves haven't worked out. So it's the Baseball America podcast with John and JJ. We're going to go ahead and wrap it up. Remind you that you can send questions to us at podcast@baseballamerica.com. Next week, Jim Callis and I will chat draft report cards. Those are thankfully in the books as of this afternoon. And also, remind
we'll be on the website next week.
Yeah,
so
starting next week, we'll have a big podcast. We'll have a draft report card podcast and chat. I want to remind you that the ultimate 2011 Baseball America reference books are ready for pre-order. Reserve your books now. We'll ship them first as soon as they come hot off the press. Go to baseballamerica.com/store and choose among the new 2011 publications, such as the Prospect Handbook, the Almanac, the Directory, the Super Register, and the 2011 Great Parks Calendar, or 2011, however you want to say it. Get the advantage in your fantasy league and be the first to get your books. Visit baseballamerica.com/store. For JJ Cooper, I'm John Manuel. Thank you so much to MLB Network for sponsoring the podcast, and we'll see you next week. So long, everybody.